What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's creating my occult belief systems that, if you scratch deep beneath the surface, are fundamentally anti-Semitic and racist? I'm Robert Evans. This is Behind the Bastards, the podcast where we have increasingly long and incoherent introductions. But this one does tie into the theme of the episode. What it doesn't tie into is my guest today, Chris Crofton.
Hey, how are you?
Horns in there. I'm doing good. I always expect the air horns. Yeah. It's okay to be eating a croissant. You continue eating that croissant, and I will introduce you as a comedian, a musician, and an advice columnist. I hope you finish the croissant now.
Yeah, I'm done.
Fantastic.
That's all true. I write an advice column called The Advice King for the Nashville scene, which is like their alt-weekly there. Mm-hmm. And, it's kind of a comedic advice column, but I get mad about stuff a lot. So, I mean, this podcast seems like, to me, a good fit. Like, you guys get mad, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do get mad. This is going to be, there's going to be some anger here. There's going to be also a lot of confusing here. This is a weird episode to bring you in on for your first episode of Bastards.
I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready for anything.
This might be the weirdest one we've done yet. Have you ever heard of a guy named Rudolf Steiner?
You know, honestly, he sounds familiar, but I can't figure out why.
Well, let me ask a follow-up question. Do you know anyone who ever went to a Waldorf school?
I don't think so.
That's okay. Now, he's not a huge name anymore. A lot of Waldorf schools are pretty common. They're an international chain of very progressive schools that have good reputation for, like, particularly the arts. Jennifer Aniston graduated from a Waldorf school. Rutger Hauer graduated from a Waldorf school. Oh. So did Justin Theroux and Big Sean. You know, there's a lot of different people who went to Waldorf schools, and the Waldorf school was the brainchild of Rudolf Steiner. Among other things. Now, most people, again, haven't heard of Mr. Steiner. He also invented organic farming and was an influential mind behind the development of Nazi ideology.
Yeah, I was thinking he sounded like a Nazi. I mean, his name's Rudolf, after all.
Yeah, he was not a Nazi, although weirdly enough, he ties in directly to another Nazi named Rudolf. It's quite the tale.
Yeah, well, the Waldorf school, okay, so that's a chain of, like, progressive...
Yeah.
High schools for rich people who...
I don't think they're just high schools, but yeah, chain of progressive schools for rich people.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So that makes sense that I would not have heard of those.
Yeah.
I'm from Connecticut. Yeah. You know what? Connecticut
There's definitely a Waldorf school.
Yeah, I just didn't... Okay, I'm not from... I didn't have enough money to be in that loop, but yeah, I'm sure I knew people who... I'm sure I actually grew up with a lot of people who probably were going to those things, or, you know, people in my...
Yeah.
New Canaan, Connecticut. I'm from New Canaan, Connecticut, which is the dude, L. Paul Bremer, the third, who dismissed the Iraqi army, went to my school.
Aww.
Yeah. And
I know Paul Bremer.
I know those kind of people.
Yeah, yeah. Paul Bremer's the kind of guy who would send his kid to a Waldorf school. Which is nothing against, actually, like, I have friends who went to Waldorf schools. I know somebody who teaches at one. We're going to be talking about their origins today and some things that still go on at some of them that are pretty dark. But a lot of them are just kind of normal progressive-y schools. So if you went to a Waldorf school, we're not calling you a Nazi, but there's about to be some Nazi shit up in this.
Right.
So,
well,
strap in.
I mean, yeah. I'm already mad at the Waldorf school for turning Justin Thoreau loose on us.
I mean, I feel like one Rutger Hauer like equals out like 1.5 Justin Thoreaus.
That's true. I mean, I'm very grateful for Rutger Hauer, and I'm equally ungrateful for old Thoreau.
Yeah, yeah. So like we have like the tears in the rain speech from the end of Blade Runner to thank Waldorf schools for, but also Justin Thoreau and a lot of friends. So
yeah,
oof, it's tough, you know. I'm going to read a Wikipedia summary of what a Waldorf Steiner school is, just so that we can kind of get on the same page about how they bill themselves. So this is kind of the basic description you'll get of one from our most trustworthy, randomly edited encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
Waldorf education, also known as Steiner education, is based on the educational philosophy of Rudolf Steiner, the founder of Anthroposophy. Its pedagogy strives to develop pupils' intellectual, artistic, and practical skills in an integrated and holistic manner. The cultivation of pupils' imagination and creativity is a central focus. So that doesn't give you a lot of details, right? Other than that, it's like, you know, it's focused on developing kids' intellectual and artistic skills, which like you'd hope any school would do. The mention of Anthroposophy is probably the one standout there. Which, have you ever heard of Anthroposophy?
No. Could you say that part again of that description where it said Anthroposophy?
Yeah, it just says that he's the founder of Anthroposophy as well as the educational philosophy behind Waldorf schools.
Wow. Okay. And that's unusual. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, yeah. You don't run into the phrase Anthroposophy a lot, but it's still a thing.
Is that the thing where you judge someone's character by the shape of their head or like lumps in their head? No, that's phrenology. That's phrenology.
Yeah, yeah, that's phrenology, although I will say probably a lot of Anthroposophists were phrenologists back in the day.
They're like sitting around feeling each other's heads and drinking cognac.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, none of that sounds inherently bad, but obviously this is behind the bastards, and it's going to get terrible.
Right.
So, let's first delve into Rudolf Steiner's life. Rudolf Steiner was born in 1861 in a tiny Austrian village whose name I am about to butcher. Kraljevec. His father is generally described as a... What? You don't even know if that's wrong, Sophie. You don't know Austrian villages.
No, you probably got it right. That's the funny part.
Well, our Austrian listenership will let me know if I'm wrong. His father is generally described as a mid-level railway official in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Once among the world's great powers, the old empire was in a state of advanced decay for much of Rudolf's life. It was also one of the world's major crossroads, an incredibly ethnically and culturally diverse melting pot encompassing the Balkans, much of Eastern Europe, and the Mediterranean. His hometown is currently part of Croatia. So... like, I guess if you're Croatian and listening, you'll know if I've pronounced Kraljevec wrong.
He was born in a Croatian melting pot.
Well, but it was Austrian at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. You'd get shot for being Croatian back in those days.
That's a white melting pot.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't consider them all white at that point. If you were from that far east in Europe, they were like, that's not a white guy.
Yeah, okay.
He's from the Balkans.
Okay.
Italians were still earning the right to be called white when he was born.
Okay.
Yeah. So he spent most of his childhood and youth in Vienna, as well as places with names like Stiermark and Burgenland. As a young man, he showed a strong interest in mathematics, physics, and natural history. He eventually enrolled, at age 18, in the Technical University in Vienna. He started attending lectures by famous philosophers of that era, one of whom was Franz Brentano. Now, Brentano was the influential mind behind a number of concepts in philosophy that I don't find interesting, and one in which I kind of do, the theory of perception. The key line here was, perception is misception. In short, Brentano believed that our external senses could not tell us anything concrete about the existence of the world, because we might just be hallucinating or whatever. As such, all we could know for certain was our internal perception. So if you smell a rose, you can't know that a rose is actually in front of you, but you can know that the scent of a rose is in your nose. That's may seem pedantic, but it had a big influence on Rudolf Steiner. And again, this was the 1880s, so people had nothing else to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so speculate, a lot of speculation going on instead of the internet. There's a lot of just like thinking.
Yeah, yeah. That's literally what people had instead of the internet, which sounds like a nightmare.
They were like, I think roses are actually a figment of our imagination, while they were like sitting around doing nothing.
That was their Twitter.
That's cool.
Thank God we have the gram now.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't know I think I know which is worse by a long shot, actually. I think speculating about whether roses are invisible or not is a better pastime than playing Candy Crush.
All right, well, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. When Rudolf was 21 in 1882, a Germanist scholar named Karl Schroer tasked him with helping to publish Goethe's works on natural history. Now, Goethe was a freethinker who considered himself a Christian but thought all Christian churches were more or less nonsense. He was notably an anti-nationalist, but is also widely considered to be one of the founding minds behind the idea of Germanness. As Steiner was working through Goethe's catalog, he also grew involved in the burgeoning pan-German movement. The German state had only been founded about a decade earlier, at the end of the Franco-Prussian War, and a lot of people in Central Europe with backgrounds similar to Steiner were super excited about this hip new concept called being German. He started churning out articles for the Austrian pan-German press and essentially tried to push the idea that Austria ought to be a part of this new Germany thing. So he gets very into the idea of Germany, which I don't know if you're aware has been kind of a mixed bag historically.
I mean, it was like the narrative of the modern world was like emerging at that time, like along with industrialization. So it was, I guess, I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about. Cold brew just made me say industrialization.
Yeah, no, it had a lot to do with industrialization.
But yeah, they had they were just establishing the narrative modern. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah, I'm just thinking about what they're doing. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's happening right now is they're moving past the idea of these countries that were countries because some dude had conquered an empire 300 years before, and we're moving towards this idea of countries based on ethnic groups. So, like the Roman Empire, that like ethnicity didn't.
It was like their Woodstock.
The Roman Empire. Yeah. It was like their Woodstock, but racist.
I think maybe I'm pan-German.
Yeah, maybe all the people who don't look exactly like me are worse, and I should just live in a country with people like me.
Right.
Yeah. So that's sort of the developing idea.
But a cultural shift. A cultural shift.
A big one. Yeah. From 1884 to 1890, Steiner made a living as the private tutor of a rich businessman and an encyclopedia writer. He also worked on his PhD at the University of Rostock. His thesis had an appropriately boring title: The Basic Question of Epistemology, Especially in Relation to Fichte's Philosophy of Science. I have no idea what it's about, and I'm not going to learn. Up through the 1890s, there was little reason to believe Steiner would ever be a particularly influential or interesting human being. During the late 1890s, he started editing literature magazines and the trade papers for the German Stage Association. He became prominent among the German typesetters and printers associations, and during the early 1900s, he lectured increasingly on history, literature, and the art of speaking to various audiences. But sometime around the turn of the 20th century, Rudolf Steiner had a profound spiritual experience. And it's kind of unclear what exactly happened, but he just sort of became convinced that he could see into the spirit world and
opium.
Communicate with celestial beings.
And it was opium. They were all smoking opium back then.
Yeah. Fucking opium or something. Some Steppenwolf bullshit. Yeah. Now, I wish I had a more exciting answer for the actual event that, like, flipped his brain on here, but yeah, it might have been fucking opium.
So he thought in some way that he had had a supernatural, or was a,
yes,
was
supernatural? He had a supernatural awakening. That would be a fair way to say it. He had a supernatural awakening and became convinced that he could communicate with this spiritual world outside of the regular world.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's where Steiner's head goes in this period of time.
Yeah, that's odd. That doesn't happen to everybody.
No, it does not happen to everybody, thankfully. Because we really could not handle that many more Rudolf Steiners in our history.
No, that happens to a lot of, like, the worst people have those kind of epiphanies. People like Jim Jones and stuff like that.
Don't have epiphanies. That's one of the leading messages of this show.
If you start to think that you are in touch with the spirit world or whatever, you might want to settle down, because you're probably about to do something bad eventually.
Stick to drugs that just dull your sense of the supernatural.
That's the
tobacco, alcohol.
Exactly.
Opium.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, chewing, no, not opium.
Chewing tobacco.
Yeah. Stick to chewing tobacco. Keep those ghosts out of your head.
Yeah. Just be normal. Settle down. Settle down, early 1900s guy.
Yeah. If only. So, in 1901, Count and Countess Brockdorf, a pair of Austrian nobles with a deep interest in the occult, listened to some of Steiner's increasingly weird lectures on history and spirituality, and got interested in the guy. They invited him to speak at the Theosophical Society.
I know about that.
Yeah? What do you know about the Theosophical Society?
That's, doesn't that have something to do with Madame Blavatsky?
It sure as shit does! That's where we're headed!
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I am very excited to talk about Helena Blavatsky. We have not talked about her on the show yet, and I think you've obviously heard of her, which is great. I'm going to guess a lot of listeners haven't. She's one of the most important people who ever lived for some terrible reasons, and is a neat tale. We'll do an episode on her someday.
But was she tied? Did she have anything to do with Rasputin?
Yeah, I think there's some rumors to that effect. I don't know exactly that, but I can tell you she had a shitload to do with some Nazis.
Okay. I didn't really know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not directly, but in terms of, like, her ideas.
Sure.
So Helena Blavatsky was about 30-some-odd years older than Rudolf Steiner, and while she never lived to see the rise of the National Socialist Party in Germany, her ideas were utterly critical to the formation of what those of us in the Nazi study and business call esoteric Hitlerism. She was a foundational mind behind the New Age movement, too, and her influence extends to shit like Goop and your local vaguely witchcraft-themed store. One of Helena's big ideas was the concept of root races, and this is where we get the term Aryans first being used in a context similar to how the Nazis used it. Helena Blavatsky is the person who, like, invented sort of the modern context with which the word Aryans is used. But, and by modern, I mean racist.
Well, like, I did not know that.
Yeah, there's an actual Aryan ethnic group that, like, went up through India and, like, into China that's, like, a thing that, like, you know, if you're an anthropologist, you're going to study the Aryans. And then there's, like, Nazi Aryans, like, this idea.
Right, because she was from Russia, right? She was not...
Yeah, I think so.
So she wasn't trying to... If she was talking about Aryans, she was probably talking about just some, like, supernatural race or something like that. But not necessarily German, and then the Germans probably were
not
like,
German.
Oh, that's us.
Yeah. Yeah, she was not talking about Germans, but she was talking about Aryans in a way that, like, some Germans really latched on and then developed her ideas more. Yeah.
That sounds like us.
Yeah, so she believed in this concept of root races, and she believed that modern peoples were descendants from these different root races. And in her philosophy, the extinction of Native Americans was a matter of what she called karmic necessity as a result of the will of spiritual masters who secretly organized and ordained all human progress. So Helena Blavatsky's like, Aryans are a thing. Whenever races get wiped out, it's good. It's ghosts making it happen because of karma. That's why genocide happens. Ghost karma.
That's fucking ghost karma. That's Scientology.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that in here. And Blavatsky, like, you know, Blavatsky had an impact on, what's his fucking name? The Satanist guy.
Aleister Crowley.
Crowley. Crowley had an impact, a significant impact on the development of L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
So, like, all of these people are tied together ideologically.
Have you talked about Jack Parsons on this show yet?
A little bit. Right. We talked a little bit about him in the L. Ron Hubbard episode. Mm-hmm. We didn't get much into like the ghost baby or the devil baby or whatever that L. Ron Hubbard tried to fuck into that lady.
Yeah.
It's a wild tale.
Yeah. Scarlet Woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of this stuff is tied. So Helena Blavatsky, like I said, she's in the intellectual chain of custody for Nazism, as well as like kind of modern Satanism, and as well as like just like random books on tarot that you pick up at like your local corner store. Like,
sure.
All of this shit is she was very influential.
And
person.
How did Rudolph find out about her?
Well, she was just a big, like, he gets invited to speak at the Theosophical Society.
Mm, okay.
And Helena Blavatsky was the founder of the Theosophical Society. So she's like the intellectual guru behind this cult that he first gets invited to speak at and then finds himself being drawn into. So that's where he gets, like, taken in by all these ideas of root races and, like, spiritual masters and karmic necessity. And I should note, the spiritual masters that Blavatsky and then Steiner talked about were like vague non-human entities, possibly from space. You wouldn't be far off to lump them in with H.P. Lovecraft's concept of the old ones. They're not wildly dissimilar. So, on the outside at least, the Theosophist Society presented itself as a group of free-thinking intellectuals asking questions about the nature of the universe and spirituality. But its actual organization was fundamentally authoritarian. Only Blavatsky and her chosen successor, Annie Besant, could receive the secret truths from their otherworldly patrons. Ergo, all power in the organization descended by necessity from those people in a pretty straight line. Now, of course, Madame Blavatsky didn't just receive her wisdom from direct conversations with the old ones. That would be silly. She also benefited from the astral equivalent of a public library, the Akashic Record. These indestructible tablets of astral light held the entirety of the human past, present, and future in them. By studying the tablets, one could discover perfect knowledge of the world and history. Now, anyone theoretically could access these records. It's sort of like Wikipedia. But since they were astral projections, the desires and biases and fears of an individual viewer could lead them to make the mistake of thinking that, like, they were reading the wrong thing on the records, which is why only trained occultists could be trusted to derive useful information from the Akashic Record.
Where was the Akashic Record? In a building?
It's in space. It's in space.
Oh, so this was like, it was not public domain. It was like,
no.
I mean, they, okay.
It's Space Ghost Wikipedia.
Right, so it's something they said existed, and everybody took their word for it kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly.
Kind of like the gold tablets that told old, what's the name of the guy who founded Mormonism?
Joseph Smith.
Yeah,
Joseph Smith.
The old, I found a tablet that said I can have sex with your wife, and they're like, where is it? It exploded.
Yeah. It's like that, but less physical, because no one even pretends that the Akashic Record was ever a physical thing.
I just love that Joseph Smith got away with that. I give it to him just for chutzpah, just to say, you know, where is the tablet? I want to see this tablet. Listen, you can have sex with my wife. I just want to see the gold tablet. It exploded.
It's like I always say, Chris. Well, great minds who want to have sex with 15-year-olds think alike.
Oh, God. So that's interesting. So Madame Blavatsky, okay, so this smells to me of just rich kids. I mean, this just sounds rich kids.
They are.
They're just a bunch of rich kids, and they like to do weird shit, which is...
not a lot of day laborers among the Theosophical Society.
No, yeah, exactly.
Not a lot of construction workers.
Your average peasant was like making bricks out of shit. While these people
are like getting ready to die in World War I.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're like eating like root vegetables and getting ready to die in World War I while these assholes are in some mahogany room.
I've talked to Goose.
Yeah, being like, I am the only one who can access the invisible library and shit like that.
The ghost library. I mean, I'm sure space.
It's fun. I've been to rich people's parties. They're fun. I mean, you know. I think they've replaced all the spiritualism has been replaced with cocaine now.
That might be a step forward, actually.
it's less dangerous. It's just 100% bullshit that goes away in the morning.
I will say Sigmund Freud was also in this city at around this time. So these people were probably doing a lot of cocaine as well.
Oh, God.
Like, this is the period in which people realize how awesome cocaine is. So I'm going to guess, actually, a lot of this is explained. That might be why Steiner had his spiritual awakening.
So these guys... Go ahead.
No, continue.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, Anyway, this sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, in a way, you know, if it didn't go bad, I mean, like the idea of like getting together, and I feel like I was born at the wrong time. I think I would have had a great time in these things being like, I think that, you know, I think if I have a little, another bump of cocaine, I bet I can see my grandma projected on a, or like I'll start spitting out. What's that stuff that they used to, what's the stuff that looked like pasta that they were always, but it turned out it was like cheesecloth. They were, during seances. What? Ectoplasm.
Oh, yeah. That's how they would fake ectoplasm. I would love that. Yeah.
I would just be like, oh, I'm about to produce ectoplasm. That'd be a way to get laid then.
I'm going out with this guy.
He produces ectoplasm. It's awesome.
I would just try to be their coke dealer and see if I could get them to let me tell lies about the Akashic record if I gave them enough blow. Like, can I see it yet? Can I see it yet?
My boyfriend
you
says
let me know when I'm there.
My boyfriend says he produces ectoplasm, but I think it's cheesecloth. I don't even know what cheese. That's what they always say in the descriptions. They're like you know, the debunkers are like it was always cheesecloth. I'm never clear on what cheesecloth is anyway.
I think those debunkers may not know because they weren't there at those coke. I mean, like, given the amount of blow these guys were probably doing, they might just have been hawking up big wads of like congealed mucus and cocaine.
Oh my god,
that would look like ectoplasm.
Oh my god,
it's just all the excess coke that couldn't get absorbed.
In that case, I bet Justin Theroux produced quite a bit of ectoplasm.
Yes, yes. And speaking of ectoplasm, you know what's a lot like ectoplasm, Chris?
What?
The products and services that support this show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, this is an ad break.
All right.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Constantly changing challenges like money sprees or treasure hunts that keep it fresh with new wild mini-games. Timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums. Delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches. Unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in with Monopoly Go. There's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now for free on the App Store and Google Play.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app.
Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner.
Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host, Vico Ortiz, and our abuelita, Liliana Montenegro, play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if Chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita first as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back! We're back. Sophie's proud of me.
I'm proud of you.
We're rolling right along into the tale of Rudolf Steiner. So, like I said, only trained occultists could be trusted to derive useful information from the Akashic Record. And as soon as he starts speaking at the Theosophical Society, Steiner almost immediately afterwards joins the society, and he very quickly rises to become one of those experts. In 1902, barely a year after his start lecturing there, he was asked to become the general secretary of the German Theosophical Society. The one term he attached to the gig was that he would be allowed to lecture and teach about the results of his own spiritual investigations. So they're like, "Will you run the German branch of this weird ghost society of ours?" And he's like, "I'll do it, but you got to let me say that I'm able to read the ghost encyclopedia too."
Wow.
So that's it's a solid grift.
Well, it's also a solid job. What a great job. I wonder what his salary was. I want to know what the salary was for the head of the Russian division of the Theosophical Society. That's what I'd like to know.
I'm gonna guess it was like an uncomfortable amount of money, but also barely enough money to buy lunch today. Like then it would have been a fortune, and today it's like a wrap in downtown LA. That's my guess for his salary. Yeah. Now, early in his studies, Steiner's studies, most of those investigations focused on Atlantis and Lemuria. He was way into Atlantis and Lemuria. And I should say, in some occult circles, Lemuria is just another name for Atlantis. But in Steiner's conception, they were two different sunken continents, both home to different root races of humanity. Now, he wrote a number of books on these topics, and they are all complete and utter nonsense.
Wow.
I'm just going to quote one paragraph from one of these books where Steiner explains that human beings started out as agender creatures capable of fucking themselves. Hmm. So,
we're definitely capable of fucking ourselves.
Yes,
we're proving that now, but not the way he means.
Pay attention. He didn't foresee climate change, no. But yeah. When we study the Akashic Records, we see that, at a period in the far past, human forms appear soft, plastic, and quite unlike those of later times. They still retain in equal measure the nature of man and woman. As time passes and matter densifies, the human body appears in two forms, one of which resembles the man's later form, the other the woman's. Before the appearance of these differentiated forms, every human being could, of itself, bring forth another. The fructification was no outer process, but one which took place within the human body itself. When the body took on a male or female form, it lost the possibility of self-fructification. Cooperation with another body was necessary in order to produce a new human being. Fructify!
Wow. That is some horse shit. That's the kind of shit that's how I would describe the beginning of the human race.
You guys have no idea how much easier this podcast would be if I could just say that I was basing all of my write-ups on a ghost encyclopedia.
Like, oh, yeah.
Sophie wouldn't have to put sources up. I wouldn't have to cite anything. I could just lie. Oh, it would be so much easier.
That's exactly also how an 8-year-old would say that the human race started.
Yeah. How did you figure this out? I saw it in the ghost book that nobody else can read.
Yeah, there's always it's always something Steiner. That nobody else can have access to.
Yeah, that's where the best evidence comes from.
Mm-hmm.
By 1912, Steiner's own theories about the universe and the Space Ghost Library had deviated enough from the Theosophical movement that he was forced to create his own weird cult. I'm going to quote now from Anthroposophy and Ecofascism by Peter Staudenmeier, the title of which sort of spoils where this story's heading. Quote, "He broke from mainstream theosophy in 1912, taking most of the German-speaking sections with him. When Besant and her colleagues declared the young Krishnamurti, a boy they discovered in India, to be the reincarnation of Christ, Steiner was unwilling to accept a brown-skinned Hindu lad as the next spiritual master. What had separated Steiner all along from Blavatsky, Besant, and the other India-oriented theosophists was his insistence on the superiority of European esoteric traditions. In the wake of the split, Steiner founded the Anthroposophical Society in Germany. Shortly before the outbreak of World War I, he moved the fledgling organization's international headquarters to Switzerland. Under the protection of Swiss neutrality, he was able to build up a permanent center in the village of Dornach."
Fuck.
So, that's the move that he makes. Dornach, yeah. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong.
Switzerland, man, their neutrality's caused a lot of fucking trouble.
It has.
They need to choose a side.
Mm-hmm.
So that is very interesting. But by the way, just quickly, Hindu Lad is a great name for an indie rock band.
Yeah, it would be. And that's this, like, so part of, like, one of the, there's a couple of weird things to do with Hinduism in here. One of them is that, like, one of the most influential fascist philosophers in this period was an Indian woman. Another of these weird facts is that, like, yeah, the Theosophical Society was very much oriented towards India, because India was, in fact, where, like, the actual Aryans, like, moved through and stuff and, like, settled and whatnot, the Indo-Aryan peoples.
Yeah.
And there was a belief, even among the Nazis, that, like, you could find some of, like, the like, Aryan bloodlines in India. And the Nazis sent a number of expeditions up into, like, Tibet and shit.
I know about that. Yeah. That's so fucking weird. Man.
It's weird, and what's worth noting here is that while the Nazis were willing to accept that, like, India might have, like, there might be Aryan bloodlines in India, Steiner was too racist for that.
Oh, okay.
So that's the guy. Yeah, that's the guy who would look at the Nazis and their ideas towards India and be like, y'all are too open-minded about this shit.
Right. Like, I'm just thinking about a guy in Hollywood who's playing bass in a band called Hindu Lad. What have you been up
to? One of those bands playing
bass.
Every song on their set list is 11 minutes or longer.
Yeah. And they're all white.
Yeah, they're all white. They opened for Van de Graaff Generator once in the 70s.
Van de Graaff.
Fuck.
That's deep.
Steiner we can talk about prog rock. I mean, I'm going to guess... to be honest, a lot of this story has influenced different prog rock albums.
Prog rock overlap with racist, early 20th century racist philosophy, esoteric. Yeah, that's cool.
If I were to read this out to the founder of King Crimson, he would just nod his head and be like, of course.
He'd be like, I know that already. You think I don't know that? Yeah. Why do you think I picked up the guitar? If it wasn't for Rudolph and his theories, I would never have started playing the guitar.
So Steiner declared his new occult philosophy to be anthroposophical spiritual science, which he called human science in the broadest sense, or, oh boy, Geistwissenschaft.
Hell yeah.
In 1912, yeah, thank you. In 1912, his followers created the Anthroposophical Society in imitation of the Theosophical Society. This was the beginning of anthroposophy, a thing which is very much still around today. Now... here's where I point out that this episode is going to wind up being a little bit disordered, because both the beliefs of anthroposophy and its impacts on society are incredibly wide-ranging. So at this point, I'm going to talk a little bit about anthroposophical medicine. All right? So we're pulling out of the time stream a little bit to talk about one of the impacts of Rudolf Steiner's beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So Steiner was not a doctor. Never had any medical training. But his spiritual revelations informed him of several critical things, and I'm going to quote now from a good write-up in Quackwatch that summarizes some key facts of anthroposophic medical beliefs. Good health is achieved when the physical organism is properly aligned with three non-physical bodies that manifest during a human's lifetime: the etheric body, a set of life forces, the astral body, higher soul forces, and the I, a spark of divine selfhood or ego that separates true humans from animals and subhumans. Real warning on that subhuman thing. Yeah. Bad health, on the other hand, often reflects the working out of one's karmic destiny. If one enters this world carrying spiritual impurities resulting from sins and errors committed in previous lives, disease can serve as a rite of passage, purging evils from one's bodily spiritual system. Thus, medical intervention is often a bad idea. A doctor who cures a patient with drugs, etc., may be blocking the patient's karmic self-healing process.
No
way that could be problematic.
We shouldn't help that person because they're gonna need to die.
Yeah,
to die as part of their journey.
This dysentery sucks for them now, but when they die and come back in another life, they're gonna be so much happier.
Yeah, it's just simple. Also, the simple, like whatever bad shit is happening to somebody is their own fault.
It's like whenever I go drinking with my friends, I try to trick them into drinking Everclear at the end of the night so that they vomit and then they feel better the next morning.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm a doctor too, essentially.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
No.
Now, what?
Not a doctor.
I am
Sophie
a doctor.
Sophie says you're not a doctor.
I am absolutely. I'm a doctor, reverend, and...
Well, if this guy's a doctor, you're a doctor. We're all doctors.
Thank you. See, exactly. And actually, shockingly, there are... a terrifying number of doctors who believe this, like actual doctors.
Every
like
trust fund kid MDs. In Europe in the beginning of the 20th century thought they were a doctor, apparently.
And unfortunately that hasn't stopped.
A Lemurian doctor.
Yeah, a Lemurian doctor with access to a ghost library where he learned medicine.
God damn. And then there were people just working.
Yeah. Yeah, then there's people like dying in a field.
Yeah, there's just some like regular people who are working and eating fucking gruel.
Yeah, yeah. Excuse me, laborer, have I told you about the ghost library?
They're like,
my boy's got the jip.
Can
he's
I
gonna
borrow
die tomorrow.
$5?
Yeah. Don't cure your son's illnesses.
Do those ghosts have $5?
It'll be better for him in the future. Now, Peter Staudenmayer is an associate professor of German history at Marquette University, and he's written out a lot of stuff about this. He's maybe the world's foremost expert on Rudolf Steiner, and I'm going to quote him now talking about anthroposophic medicine. Quote, Steiner's doctrine of reincarnation, embraced by latter-day anthroposophists the world over, holds that individuals choose their parents before birth, and indeed that we plan out our lives before beginning them to ensure that we receive the necessary spiritual lessons. If a disembodied soul balks at its own chosen life prospects just before incarnation, it fails to incarnate fully. The source, according to anthroposophists, of prenatal defects and congenital disabilities. So, if you're born with, like, an arm that doesn't work, like, you got one of those, like, shrunken arms, or if you're born with, like, you know, paralyzed from the waist down, that's because Ghost You is a coward.
Yeah, so it's...
See? That's fine! That's a healthy thing to believe.
It's all... Well, I don't know if all these philosophies end up being this basically, like, I don't want to pay taxes thing, but that's what it really adds up to.
Yeah.
It's just like, that guy with no arm, it's his own fault. I don't... It's just always justifying why if you feel good, you don't have to bother with anybody who feels bad.
About 70% of occult beliefs, historically, are rooted in rich people wanting to explain why it's fine that things were great for them while everyone else was dying in a field.
Yeah, it's just like libertarianism, except it's just got ghost libraries.
And like, in fairness to the occult, that's also like most of early Christianity.
It's just always the same. It's such a hack message too. It's just like, it's just like, what's the most esoteric reason we can come up with for not giving a fuck about anybody?
Yeah, I guess not early, like middle Christianity. Like once the church becomes an institution, it starts being like, this is why the people who are rich and powerful should be rich and powerful.
Yes,
and
it's always the same. It's always the same fucking message.
Yeah, it's always the same message. Like at the start, you get a guy who's like Jesus and is like, I'm going to beat the shit out of people at banks because they're assholes. And then 150 years later, it's turned into like, no, the people with banks are the people God likes the best.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
just never pull away from that belief system.
That's
so
okay.
this is the occult version of that.
Yeah.
Now, as fucked up and blatantly anti-medical as all of this sounds, there are a shocking number of actual MDs today who practice anthroposophical medicine. And in a little bit of fairness, they do use and prescribe real drugs. They are actual doctors. They also use natural and holistic remedies and therapies, though, some of which work and some of which are nonsense, woo, bullshit. I'm going to quote now from the National Institute of Health. Quote, currently, there are approximately 24 anthroposophic medical institutions, which include hospitals, departments in hospitals, rehabilitation centers, and other inpatient healthcare centers in Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Italy, the Netherlands, and the United States. In Germany, three large anthroposophic hospitals provide accident and emergency services within the requirement plans of the German federal states. Two of them are academic teaching hospitals linked to neighboring universities. So this is a thing today. There are doctors who believe this shit today. And
I wonder
again,
where
these
in America
guys are
they
actual
are.
MDs. Yeah, they're
Malibu,
around. I didn't look up
Malibu.
Exactly where, but they exist. Yeah, I'm going to guess there's a shitload of them in Malibu. You throw a fucking rock in Malibu, you'll hit an anthroposophic doctor telling you that your kid's birth defects are because his ghost was scared.
Have you tried an anthroposophic doctor? They're amazing. Mm-hmm.
They tell your kid it's his fault.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
They validate, it's not my they fault. Validate your belief system.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of people who will say that anthroposophic doctors are just doing a slightly different kind of medicine and they're perfectly good doctors. And maybe that's true. I haven't met any, but I am skeptical of the idea that any of them could be truly good doctors. For one thing, most of them are anti-vaccine. See, Rudolf Steiner believed in reincarnation, and he thought disease was part of a patient's karma. So if you treat illnesses, or if you prevent an illness, you'd just force that person to get sick again in a future life. During one of his lectures to doctors, Steiner said this of the smallpox vaccine. If we destroy the susceptibility to smallpox, we are concentrating only on the external side of karmic activity. See, it's not a full treatment to stop someone from getting smallpox because you're not dealing with the actual root of the problem, which is space ghosts.
Which is like a character flaw.
See? Yeah, it's a character flaw from the past.
Yeah. So that the doctor then...
That's why you shouldn't get vaccinated.
The doctor's job is converted from helping someone live to letting them die. I mean, letting them die sometimes, because whatever, it's their own fault. I mean, it's some process. It's like some learning curve or learning. Like, you need to get sick.
Yeah.
Or else you're not going to.
Yeah.
You're not going to. I don't know. You're not going to die like you're supposed to because you're a bad person.
It's literally, you need to get sick because when you were a ghost, you decided you were going to get, like, smallpox at age 7. And you have to learn the lessons that you will be taught by getting smallpox at age 7. You picked this, so don't complain.
So Steiner, this guy Steiner must not have had any ailments, I guess. He never got a cold or anything. He must have thought he was...
Because
this seems like the kind of philosophy that would end up killing you. You know what I mean?
It's one of those things. I feel like I don't have... I wish I had more information about his early life. I just don't. He either was lucky and had none of those problems, or he had all of the fucking diseases as a kid, and he just grew up thinking like, well, everybody should have to go through this bullshit.
Right, and he like came out of them. And he's like, yes. I'm like, it's been a character builder for me, and it should be a character builder for everybody else.
My guess is one of the two. Either he didn't get sick at all, or he was like the sickest son of a bitch when he was a little kid, and he just grew up thinking that that was normal.
Yeah.
And what everybody should go through.
He's like, instead of pulling himself up by his bootstraps, he pulled himself up by his diseases.
Yeah, exactly. His disease straps, which were etheric and existed on the astral plane. So, we just talked about, Steiner said that, if we destroy the susceptibility to smallpox, we're concentrating only on the external side of karmic activity. So he believed that. He also believed that dark wizards might try to create evil fake medications that would cut humanity off from its spiritual roots. Yeah, we got some wizards.
Wow.
Quote, endeavors to achieve this will be made by bringing out remedies to be administered by inoculation. Only these inoculations will influence the human body in a way that will make it refuse to give a home to the spiritual inclinations of the soul. So evil wizard doctors are going to give you vaccines that make your body refuse your soul.
Hmm.
Rudolf Steiner. Yeah. So, again...
Seems like a bold stance to take based on nothing.
Yeah, it's a bold stance to take based on nothing, and a weird stance to be the basis of a type of medicine that, again, a significant number of actual MDs believe today. So, there are a lot of websites out there dedicated to defending Rudolf Steiner and anthroposophy.
Wow.
And we're going to hear from a couple of them a few times. One such site assures us, quote, anthroposophical doctors reject nothing in the toolbox of conventional medicine a priori. Every option is considered for its appropriateness in a specific instance. Antibiotics are used when necessary, but so are homeopathic remedies. Physical therapy is prescribed, but so is curative eurythmy, which is movement exercise to balance the forces within the body. It's like dancing medicine. So, you know, we'll give people antibiotics when they have infections, but we'll also give them water with nothing in it that's been like waved around. A root that we say cures things.
Mm.
That's a good doctor. Now, that like seems, I guess, not the least like that's not the craziest thing in the world. Given like the wide galaxy of stupid things people will do because they think that it's better for their health than traditional medicine. But Steiner's own words are even less reasonable than that. He told his followers that the heart was not a pump and that blood just circulates on its own, presumably by magic. He was also insistent that the brain was not involved in thought or cognition. He prescribed mistletoe for cancerous tumors, and he was, in general, a complete fucking quack.
So, wow.
I'm going to quote from Quackwatch again, talking about the doctors that Steiner inspired. Anthroposophical physicians do not appear to conduct double-blind controlled experiments, so it is almost impossible to evaluate their success rates. All doctors witness mysterious declines as well as mysterious recoveries. Believers in anthroposophical medicine relate tales of highly successful treatments, but whether the alleged cures resulted from the treatments, the body's natural healing processes, or overly optimistic reporting cannot be determined. Using ineffective alternatives instead of necessary science-based care can have serious consequences. On WaldorfCritics.org, Robert Smith Hall describes how he suffered while being raised by anthroposophists. They believe that sickness is the soul incarnating, and also that it has to do with karma. They don't believe in inoculation, so I had all the child diseases going around, some twice. Smith Hall reports that he was constantly ill throughout his childhood, and that the primary treatment that his anthroposophical doctors prescribed was little white sugar pills called Infludo, and buckets of horsetail tea, and also chamomile tea.
What the hell's horsetail tea?
It's like a plant.
Oh, okay. I thought it was real horsetail.
No, no, no.
No thanks. Count me out of that one. I'm quitting I'll quit that religion based on I'm not having some tea made out of a horsetail.
I mean, I suspect that would work better than chamomile tea.
Maybe.
These horses are full of healthy diseases.
I guess so.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah. Now, certain foods made him sick, so he was required to eat great quantities of these very foods. The feeling that my parents had was that I should eat more of it, as I obviously needed to incarnate through the food, so I grew up being force-fed food that was making me sick. As an adult, having broken away from anthroposophy, Smith Hald was examined by a conventional doctor who correctly diagnosed his wheat intolerance. He's been improving ever since.
Is this is this Angelina Jolie's kid?
You kind of get the feeling, right?
Yeah, this kid grew up in Malibu.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like Brentwood.
Somewhere with rich people. And like his parents were like, oh, he gets sick whenever he eats wheat. And the doctor was like, that means you got to feed this kid as much wheat as he can fucking stand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never stop pouring wheat into the boy.
What a bummer.
Yeah, it sucks.
I mean, that's terrible. I mean, I'm lucky he didn't have a peanut allergy or he would have died right away.
You get the feeling that some kids with peanut allergies and anthroposophic doctors didn't make it.
Yeah, right away they would die. Have more peanuts. Yeah. Oh, they're dead.
They incarnated.
They were jerks when they were ghosts.
Look, I know it's sad, but your kid picked this when he was a ghost.
Do you
and
know
now
what
he's
kind
a ghost
of
again?
A jerk and a weakling your kid was when he was a ghost.
Yeah.
Now, excuse me? I'm a doctor. Don't excuse me.
I'm a doctor. You know my school of medicine is great because it's founded by a guy who never went to medical school.
Why don't you take a look at the ghost library if you're so smart?
Oh, I'm sorry. Have you read the space encyclopedia?
Wow.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk some more about anthroposophic medicine and its impact on European vaccination rates in a
little
bit.
I'm going to have some more cold brew. This is great. I love this show. Yeah. I mean, this is very exciting stuff for me. This is my... I love this stuff.
Yeah. It's fucking
wild. This is what
wild.
I do in my spare time, but I just don't have a show to... I don't get to talk about it. I'm all by myself. This is great.
Yeah, this is what I did in my spare time until I had a show. And now it's what I do in my spare time, but now Sophie yells at me, and I get money.
That's great.
So it works out. Yeah. So we are going to get back to anthroposophic medicine, but before we get there, we're going to have to peel back a little bit and talk about the founding of the first Waldorf school. So for the sake of fairness, I'm going to quote from a pro-Steiner website now, Waldorf Answers. Quote, in 1918, when a revolution took place, not only in Russia, note, by me, the Russian Revolution started in 1917, but also in Germany, and threatened to disintegrate the social fabric, Steiner presented suggestions for a conscious threefold differentiation of society as a path for the future. It focused on the development of freedom in the cultural sphere, equality in the sphere of politics and legislation, and a globally oriented brotherhood in the sphere of economy. Steiner lectured widely on this topic, leading to a movement for social threefolding. That sounds nice, right?
Mm.
Yeah. In 1919, this led to the founding of the first free Waldorf school in Stuttgart at the initiative of Immolt Molt, the CEO of Waldorf Astoria Cigarette Factory. The school became the model for the Waldorf movement, leading to the building and development by 2009 of some 1,600 Waldorf kindergartens and 994 independent Waldorf or Rudolf Steiner schools worldwide, offering educational activities from early childhood through high school and, in some cases, programs for adults. So, Chris,
yes,
can you think of a better way for a school to start than a cigarette factory paying
it started
for it?
It was paid for by I thought it was in a cigarette an old
no, No, the CEO of the cigarette factory decided he liked the cut of Rudolf Steiner's jib and was like, yeah, let's make a fucking school.
Right. Well, it makes sense. Some rich guy, yeah. If you own a cigarette factory, you got to be doing pretty good, so you probably got nothing to do. So then you want to think about things that are, you know, you got nothing to think about, so you're going to start thinking about, hey, oh, I want to think about something exciting. How about this bullshit?
And then you make a school.
Yeah, let's make a school. I got nothing to do. Let's make a school.
Yeah, let's make a school.
I got a bunch of money.
Teach kids that cigarettes are critical for human health. I'm going to guess that Rudolf Steiner was very supportive of cigarettes as a health remedy.
Which,
to be fair, most people were at this point in time. Yeah. Now, you know what actually is good for your health, Chris?
What's that?
The products and services that support this show.
Oh, I see what you did.
Guaranteed to cure your diseases. Every product, whatever happens to be advertised, will cure whatever you happen to have.
Well,
that's the guarantee
doctors.
I make. We are all doctors. I come from the Evans School of Medicine.
Going by Rudolph's rules, we're all doctors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You just got to incarnate that shit,
yo. Call me Dr. Crofton. I'm the anthropomorphic whatever. I've got a school of dilettantism.
Yeah. All right. Products.
The evidence keeps pouring in. At this point, the facts are undeniable. It's an open and shut case. Monopoly Go is the most fun you can have in a mobile game. Millions of people pass Go every day because this game is always bringing something new to the table. Countless crazy tournaments you can join with your friends as partners or teams. Constantly changing challenges like money sprees or treasure hunts that keep it fresh with new wild mini-games. Timed events offering bonuses like massive multipliers or rent frenzies to help you get huge rewards. And there's so many rewards to discover. Rare stickers you can trade with friends to complete albums, delightful emojis to taunt people with when you raid their riches, unique playing pieces, and so much more. The verdict is in with Monopoly Go. There's something new to discover every time you play. So don't miss out. Go download it now for free on the App Store and Google Play.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage. A 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
Whoa.
We're back, and we're talking about the cigarette factory that started a school. Now, as you might guess, a school founded by the CEO of a cigarette factory did not portend great things for the future of human health. Dr. Edzard Ernst has determined that between 1999 and 2010, 10 outbreaks of measles in the UK, the Netherlands, Austria, and Germany have centered around Waldorf schools, all of which had immunization rates lower than 10%. There are more than 800 Waldorf schools in the world today. Many of these are well-regarded institutions, and a huge number of famous people have graduated from them. A lot of folks who work at these schools are, I'm sure, fine people and educators. But there are also some really fucking dark stories from these places. Sharon Lombard, a parent whose daughter was enrolled at a Waldorf school, had this experience when her kid got sick. Quote, "The anthroposophic doctor made a diagnosis. My child had lost the will to live. He announced one of the potential cures. We were to give our daughter red, yellow, and orange crayons to color with. I looked at my husband in disbelief. When the doctor instructed us to make the sign of a flame out of aurum cream over my child's heart at bedtime, I was dumbfounded. He told us to apply the gold cream from below the heart upwards, towards the sky." So that's...
Well...
That's medicine.
How did this... All right, but why did this woman not have any idea that the school was weird?
Well,
that's the thing. It's like, how do you end up in a Waldorf school if you're not already a crackpot?
But it's got a great reputation for like the arts and stuff. And like they do, like a lot of really famous actors and musicians and stuff went to Waldorf schools. They seem to be good at encouraging creativity in kids.
So they're willing to... They want the networking for their kids, and they're willing to kill them if they...
I don't think they really look into it that hard.
Right.
They don't know what anthroposophic medicine is really, but they know that the doctor there is an actual MD with a medical degree. Yeah.
That makes sense. It's how people get people into cults. They tell them one thing about it. They just don't tell them the other thing about it.
Exactly. And like in this parent,
you're gonna love the Waldorf school. It's so great. Yeah. It's all about creativity, and also they won't give you any medicine. But we're not gonna.
Talk
about
if your daughter's sick, they'll give her crayons.
Yeah, they'll give you. Yeah, I mean, that's the way that stuff works. Yeah. It's true.
Now, this woman's daughter was eventually hospitalized, and she did recover under the care of normal doctors. And if the only impact of Waldorf schools was a few sick and presumably a couple of dead kids, I might not be writing this episode. But the rabbit hole of weird here goes a lot deeper, and this is where things get racist as fuck.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that.
Yeah. There's a lot. It was really hard to like figure out the how to pattern this out time wise because there's just so much to get to. So that we're gonna be jumping around a little bit more than usual in this episode.
Well, I got caught up in that. I was already mad at Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for
he's
causing
the worst reindeer.
People to get sick, and now I forgot all about the racism.
Yeah. So, I found a fascinating write-up by a former Waldorf student, also on Quackwatch. This student points out that the vast majority of Steiner's spiritual beliefs and the ideas behind anthroposophy itself were actually hidden from the students at the school. They don't talk about these beliefs, like, to the kids. Quote, "The Waldorf I attended was lovely, with caring teachers and pleasant, carefully selected classmates. For the most part, I enjoyed my years there. Waldorf was small, 20 or so students at each grade level. The ambiance was close and comfortable. As Steiner would have wanted, Waldorf was a religious school, but with a twist. It hid its faith. The school presented itself as a progressive, ultra-modern learning institution, and in some ways it was. But the secular kind of framing of this was a disguise. Quote, we students memorized no passages from holy books. We sang from no hymnals. Yet a strange aura hung about the school. There was a pervasive but unspoken spiritualistic vibe in almost every lesson, in almost every activity. It was hard for most patients to detect, but we students felt it to one degree or another. It was in the air we breathed. It defined the tenor and subtext of our days. Ultimately, it shaped and colored our education as effectively as if priests were delivering sermons to us." So you don't state this stuff outright, but you kind of try to teach these kids some of the spiritual lessons of your beliefs, like, covertly, without sort of directly proselytizing or talking about the actual shit Steiner believed.
Yeah.
Later on in the write-up, this student gives a deeply unsettling example of what precisely lurked beneath the surface. In 12th grade, this happened to him in a biology class taught by the school headmaster, a guy named Gardner. Quote, "He explained that the various races stood at different levels of moral development. Each was forging its own destiny. He said these things sympathetically, with no hint of condescension, yet the vibe was in the room that morning. The terms he used were more metaphysical than biological. The Oriental races, he said, are ancient, wise, but vitiated. The African races are youthful, unformed, childlike, he said. Standing near the center of humanity's family are currently the most advanced races, the whites, he said."
Where is this? Is there any reference as to where the school is, or?
I think this one, yeah, this one's in the United States. I believe it's on the East Coast. This is during like the 1970s, I think, when this happened.
Wow. Now,
yeah, the author of this article also recalled an unsettling botany class with a teacher named Hertha Karl, who also taught German and earth science, whatever that is.
Quote, can we find her on Facebook?
I think she's dead now. She would have been a mature adult in the 70s. Yeah. Of all the Waldorf faculty, she made the least effort to disguise her devotion to Steiner. She drew figures of eight on the blackboard and lectured us about limniscates, the mystic interaction of the telluric and etheric forces, which is the basic structure of nature, she said. During one day's main lesson, she veered off topic to warn us to never receive blood transfusions from members of other races. Blacks and Orientals have blood types that are physically different from ours, she taught us, and receiving such inferior blood would diminish our Aryan qualities.
Hmm.
Yeah.
nothing coded about that.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing coded there. So Rudolf Steiner did not live a particularly fascinating life. He mostly wrote and lectured and taught people crazy shit throughout the early 1920s. He did thousands of lectures, 330 alone from January to September of 1924. He died in March of 1925, and his followers suggest that he basically exhausted himself with his workload.
How old was he?
He was 1860s. He would have been like in his 50s or 60s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did not have what I would call a particularly compelling life by the standards of other cult leaders like L. Ron Hubbard. Like, when it just comes to the details we know about his existence, it's not super wacky or fun to listen to. There's no forcing a bunch of kids onto boats and, like, searching for treasure in the ocean for 13 years. But Rudolf Steiner is something of an iceberg. What you can see above the waterline looks more or less respectable, or at least nothing, no darker or sillier than, like, you know, your friend with a tarot deck. But below that is where things get fucked up very quickly and where we run into the weird race science stuff. Like Madame Blavatsky, Steiner believed that Native Americans were, in his words, dying out of their own nature. He believed they were one of several lower races of humans. Most Aboriginal and non-white races fell into this category. In Steiner's mind, they were closer to animals than higher races of humanity. Anthroposophy teaches that many of these races are descended from degenerate remnants of the Lemurian root race and are thus devolving into literal apes. Steiner called, for example, Australian Aboriginal people, quote, stunted men whose descendants still inhabit certain parts of the earth today as so-called savage tribes. Now, Steiner believed that...
I just don't understand. I mean, I can't believe people... I mean, it's just like, there's just... You can just make... I mean, this is all made up, just made up. I mean, you just make it up. I mean, it's unbelievable. You just fucking just start just spouting off about... And you wear spectacles or whatever and have a fucking ascot on and that's about it. It's all theater. It's like theater and racism combined.
I mean, it's only theater and racism if you don't believe he really read from the Ghost Encyclopedia in space.
Right.
Yep.
Who believes that? Who are these? Oh, God, I would like to...
I mean, ghost librarians, for one.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
They gotta work.
Yeah. Now, Steiner believed that Japanese, Mongolian, and Inuit people were descendants of Atlantis, and he had a broadly positive attitude, well, a more positive attitude towards them than, you know, Native Americans or, obviously, black people. The best race, of course, was the Aryan race. I'm going to quote from Rudolf Steiner now. We are within the great root race of humanity that has peopled the earth since the land on which we now live rose up out of the inundation of the ocean. Ever since the Atlantean race began slowly to disappear, the great Aryan race has been the dominant one on earth. If we contemplate ourselves, we here in Europe are thus the fifth subrace of the great Aryan root race.
I wonder how he felt about frogs, because frogs are from the water.
Yep.
I wonder if he thought they were like wise men or something.
He might have agreed with Alex Jones on the subject of frogs and their sexuality. It's hard to say.
Frogs are some like remnant race that's on the way out, like that did bad stuff when they were ghosts.
Yeah, frogs were terrible as ghosts. That's why they got to live in swamps. Now, Rudolf believed that every race, or Volk, had its own special aura that best fit in its own specific homeland. He believed in something called Volksgeist, a natural spirit embodied by an etheric being that spiritually led that group of people. Now, if you've studied your Nazism, that's essentially Nazism missing one or two little steps.
Can you say that one more time?
Yeah. Volksgeist is a national spirit, the spirit of a nation, of a specific homeland of a racial people. That's a Volksgeist.
Uh-huh.
Like, the Volksgeist is a national spirit that embodies, like, the spirituality of a group of people. Like, an etheric being who is, like, the soul of the German people, for example.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So the Nazis didn't believe, obviously, Hitler was not an etheric being. He was a real person. But the Nazis did very much believe that he was the embodied national spirit of Aryanness, of Germany. So, again, Steiner was not literally a Nazi. He died in 1925 and was probably only broadly aware of Hitler and his party. But Hitler's own, like, the actual beliefs that the Nazis inculcated once they came to power were basically the same thing Rudolf Steiner's teaching, instead of it being an etheric being, it's literally Hitler. But it's the same idea.
Yeah, I've read a lot about this, the birth, what led into Nazism. And it's like, if you want to be like a dictator, you search around for justifications. And there was this soup of convenient bullshit for them to pick from that was happening around that time. So yeah, it was like convenient, like this guy was a dumbass, but this other person Hitler may have even thought this guy was a dumbass, but he used him as a, you know what I mean? I mean, it's just, this all becomes useful, like these philosophies become useful to someone who puts them all together and says, here's why I need to do this bad shit.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Steiner's not the only guy saying stuff like this in the lead up to the Nazis.
No, I know.
The Theosophical Society is saying similar. Like, he's part of, like, a constellation of thinkers who prepares the intellectual soil in Germany for the kind of beliefs that the Nazis introduce.
Yeah.
Like, he helps ready the soil. Although, again, I want to make it very clear, he was not a Nazi himself, was not a follower of Hitler's.
Yeah.
Now, back to racism. I'm going to quote again from that Staudenmayer write-up. That's the professor from Marquette University who's done a lot of the research on Rudolf Steiner. Quote, Steiner propagated a host of racist myths about Negroes. He taught that black people are sensual, instinct-driven, primitive creatures ruled by their brainstem. He denounced the immigration of blacks to Europe as terrible and brutal and decried its effects on blood and race. He warned that white women shouldn't read Negro novels during pregnancy, otherwise they'd have mulatto children. In 1922, he declared, the Negro race does not belong in Europe, and the fact that this race is now playing such a large role in Europe is, of course, nothing but a nuisance. But the worst insult, from an anthroposophical point of view, is Steiner's dictum that people of color can't develop spiritually on their own. They must either be educated by whites or reincarnated in white skin. Europeans, in contrast, are the most highly developed humans. Indeed, as Steiner said, Europe has always been the origin of all human development. Which, I think some people I know in the Middle East would be a little bit pissed to hear that, but it's a argument for another day.
Yeah.
For Steiner and for anthroposophy, there is no doubt that whites are the ones who develop humanity in themselves. The white race is the race of the future, the spiritually creative race. Now, this is all very fucked up. The good news is that most anthroposophist beliefs are, you know, hidden away from the students at Waldorf schools. This stuff is not like the general curriculum at a Waldorf school. And a lot of Steiner's work has been edited to make it fit into the modern era. And it's been pruned of its racism and just kind of turned into a more generically harmless, weird kind of occult new agey mishmash of nonsense. The influence these deeper racist occult beliefs has on modern Waldorf schools is not consistent from country to country or from institution to institution, but it is still definitely present in some areas. In 2014, the BBC reported that diversity training was instituted on one Waldorf campus after, quote, four white teachers asked to tick a box giving their ethnicity, ticked every box. They believed that they had ascended through all the races. Now, that's not a harmless belief, because that means that if you have a student who is, say, black or Hispanic or, you know, any other kind of non-white race, you don't just believe that, like, you know what it's like to be them because you lived that in a past life. You believe that you're better than them because you ascended past their level of existence and that they're going to have to live and die before they can come back as a better skin color.
Yeah, it's fucking horrible. This is all
horrible.
This is all absolutely horrible.
It's awful. Now, their reporting was based on a Department of Education memo on this school in the UK, which revealed that at least some Waldorf campuses were teaching children that Atlantis was a real thing. And if those kids were being taught Steiner's ideas about Atlantis, they were probably being taught at least a few of his ideas about a racial hierarchy. And again, this is in 2014 in the United Kingdom.
Wow.
Yeah. In response to this, the Steiner Waldorf Schools Fellowship, an umbrella group representing the community of Waldorf schools, said this. While the superficial reading of a handful of Steiner's voluminous, extensive lectures present statements that appear racist in modern terms, none of these occur in the educational writings. See, the idea
who said that,
like, that was the Steiner Waldorf Schools Fellowship, which is a group that represents these schools collectively.
And their spokesman, Chris Angel.
Yeah. Look, now it's like, okay, superficially, me saying that black people are a less evolved race and are degenerating into an ape-like species, that sounds racist superficially. But just superficially.
Well, like, boy, this is depressing.
Yeah, it's bad. Now, SWSF, which is that umbrella group's guidelines, published in 2011, noted that in order to be considered a Waldorf school, an institution needed to be able to show that, quote, an anthroposophical impulse lies at the heart of planning for the school. And there sure as shit is racism in Rudolf Steiner's writings on anthroposophy. So it does seem like there's got to inherently be some racism in any of these schools that actually, like, stick to the heart of anthroposophic teachings. That said, Waldorf schools are very decentralized. They aren't part of a strict hierarchy, and there's a lot of variance between different schools. If you went to a Waldorf school that seemed totally fine, I'm not trying to say that you imbibed a bunch of stealth racism. That said, maybe comb through your memories and see if there was some weirdness that you learned that, like, never quite made sense to you, because there might be.
If you meet a rich kid who's racist and has smallpox,
yeah,
you have the Waldorf school system to thank.
I'm just saying, maybe we should check in with Jennifer Aniston.
I mean, yeah. So annoying. It's so stupid. It's fucking, yeah. Rich people have nothing fucking to do, so they fill their time with a bunch of nonsense because they got nothing to fucking do.
Yeah.
It's really true. It's just a simple matter of spare time. You got nothing to fucking do and everything's going right, so you just make up a bunch of shit to cause some trouble because you're bored out of your goddamn mind.
I mean, that's where this all comes from. I'm sure a lot of students today in Waldorf schools, there's a lot of rich kids, but I'm sure there's also a lot of, like, middle class and working class kids whose parents just sacrifice because they're like, well, look at all of the great, my kid wants to be a dancer, and a bunch of great dancers.
Don't try and sell me on Waldorf schools being good.
I'm not trying to sell you on the schools. I'm trying to point out, like, I'm sure there's a bunch of parents who are like, and I'm sure it works out for some of them. Robert, like, a lot of great dancers go to Waldorf.
Robert,
schools.
It takes me. Yeah. It takes. First of all, we don't need any more dancers. Second of all, Robert, you have no idea how easy it is to make me decide that I fucking hate something. I am so mad already. I want to go. You know, I want to, right, as soon as I'm done with this podcast, I'm going to drink even more cold brew and just go to the nearest Waldorf school and find out what the
punch
fuck is
dancer.
Going on. Yeah, just find out what the fuck is going on. Like, see these racist dancing smallpox people.
I was going to defend the people going there a little bit, but it sounds like more fun to declare, like, essentially an intellectual jihad on the concept of dancing. So let's do that.
I'm just sick of rich people fucking, you know, not just adjusting to the fact that life is essentially
random,
a one note situation. You fucking live and then you die, and there's no ghost libraries. And as much as it's fun to poke around with the idea that maybe there, I believe in ghosts, actually, sort of. But,
well, then why not a ghost library?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, but just keep it within. Realize that this is something that you're doing as a hobby because you're bored. Don't take it seriously, for God's sake. It's one thing to think maybe ghosts are real because you got a day off and you got nothing better to do. But to fucking take that and run with it till you establish a school, then you're an absolute moron. I mean, that's the thing, is you're actually a dumbass. The whole idea that you would take your musings, the musings of a bored human, go every which way possible. And the fact that you would codify them and make a school out of your dumbass musings while you're bored is just so maddening to me, and also a perfect example of the egos of these wealthy people, that they decide that their own dumbass musings are actually true. I mean, the things that cross people's minds, you know, are The fact that, oh God, just makes me mad. Anyway.
No, I mean, I agree with you about Steiner and the original people who cooked this up and the people who believe seriously in this stuff.
Yeah.
It does seem like most of the parents at these schools know none of this stuff. Like, I'm going to be willing to bet if you, like, ask a bunch of parents at Waldorf schools, what's anthroposophy? They wouldn't be able to give you, like, an answer.
I don't have any like, kids, so I'm mad at parents, too, just generally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like,
I'm
you
mad
should
at
definitely,
everybody involved in this whole story.
If you send your kids to an alternative school, you should make sure that a guy who was like 10 steps away from Hitler didn't come up with the philosophy behind how it's taught.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, if you went to a Waldorf school, I'm very curious for your experiences, but you may not have imbibed any racism.
Yeah, that'd be said, interesting from this podcast if you get response from people who went to Waldorf schools and see if they got through it and just are great answers and no racism.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, but there is documented evidence of eruptions of dangerous racist bullshit within them.
There's just a fucking every dancer you see is a racist with smallpox.
All dancers are racist and diseased.
Yep.
That's the official stance.
I noticed you're
bastards.
A good dancer, you piece of shit.
You fucking Nazi.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to quote from Peter Stoudemire again, or Professor Stoudemire again. Quote, in 1995, there was a scandal in the Netherlands when it became publicly known that the Dutch Waldorf schools were teaching racial ethnography, where children learn that the black race has thick lips and a sense of rhythm, and that the yellow race hides its emotions behind a permanent smile. In 1994, the Steinerite lecturer Rainer Schnur, at one of his frequent seminars for the Anthroposophist Adult School in Berlin, gave a talk with the rather baffling title, Overcoming Racism and Nationalism Through Rudolf Steiner. According to a contemporary account, Schnur emphasized the essential differences between races, noted the infantile nature of blacks, and alleged that due to immutable racial disparities, no equal and global system can be created for all people on Earth, and that, because of the differences between races, sending aid to the developing world is useless.
What year was that?
1994!
Wow, and that was in Amsterdam?
That's in Berlin.
Oh, Berlin.
Fucking Slick Willie's the president in the United States, and you're in Berlin, and like, yeah, that's the kind of shit people are saying. Steiner supporters, when they acknowledge his racism, tend to try to write it off as him being a product of his time. And that's not an inherently unfair argument. There's a lot of great thinkers who believed racist shit because it was the accepted wisdom in their day, and we shouldn't discount all of a person's ideas just because they grew up in a time where people, like, didn't know things were bullshit that are bullshit. After all, people today believe in the moon, and we wouldn't want future generations to ignore all of our philosophers just for that. However, the product of his time argument doesn't hold water in the case of Rudolf Steiner. Remember, according to anthroposophic belief, he was reading all of this shit off of the Akashic records, which transcend time and space. So if anthroposophists truly believe what their guru wrote down about the source of his revelations, then when those revelations took place can't matter. If you actually are an anthroposophist who believes in all of this stuff literally, that means that you have to take his race science stuff literally, because he's not influenced by the bias of his times. He's reading what the record says about the nature of the black race and the yellow race and like whatever racist terms that he came up for them.
Right. Like, you can't like say both things. You can't say believe him and then you also think he's a product of his times.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's not a product of his times, you think he's invested with some sort of supernatural.
Yeah. He can't be a product of his times because he's reading the ghost books from
allowing this guy extra normal power. I mean, part of this belief system is to believe that this man had some sort of supernatural power.
Yeah, exactly. And at least supernatural sight.
Yeah. And that these race things he's talking about are somehow. Not only true, but written in the ether. I mean, it's even worse. It's like this isn't even coming. He's basically a vessel for this stuff. This is like divine truth.
Yeah, it's divine, like inherent truth. It's not even based on his theories. Yeah,
that's cult shit. Yeah, that's
yeah. Oh, it's definitely cult shit. Yeah.
Wow.
So this is why people like Professor Staudenmeier will argue that anthroposophy is the covert curriculum, those are his words, of most Waldorf schools. There is evidence that in internal forum discussions online, anthroposophist educators have been caught talking about their belief that karma and reincarnation is, quote, the basis of all true education. And just as children choose their parents before birth, many anthroposophist teachers believe that teachers and students choose one another ethereally as well.
Oh,
I'm going to quote from Peter Staudenmeier one more time. The curriculum at Waldorf schools is structured around the stages of spiritual maturation posited by anthroposophy. From 1 to 7 years, a child develops his or her physical body. From 7 to 14 years, the etheric body. And from 14 to 21, the astral body. These stages are supposed to be marked by physical changes. Thus, kindergartners at Waldorf schools can't enter first grade until they've begun to lose their baby teeth. In addition, each pupil is classified according to the medieval theory of humors. A Waldorf child is either melancholic, choleric, sanguine, or phlegmatic. The categorization is in part based on the child's external physical appearance and is treated accordingly by the teachers. Mm. We all know the medieval humor philosophy of health was absolutely correct, which is why people lived so long in the medieval era.
The nurse's
That's what
office,
they're famous for.
The nurse's office at their school is like just a bunch of leeches in a jar.
It's an axe on a table.
Yeah. I don't want to go to the nurse. She puts that snake on me.
Send me to the crayon doctor instead.
Yeah.
Now, I can't and won't speculate on how all this might have influenced famous Waldorf grads like Jennifer Aniston. I'm deeply curious.
I want to know, okay, first of all, I've always wanted to be a fly. I mean, I would give my right arm to hear just 45 minutes of conversation between Justin Theroux and Jennifer Aniston, you know, at dinner. I mean, I would normally, like, just because I can only imagine how fucking stupid it would be.
Very
and not
dumb.
Because they're necessarily stupid, but because they're in this bubble that would just makes what they would talk about be so uniquely weird that
there's a certain level of fame and exclusion from normality where you can't talk about things that don't sound like insane bullshit to anybody worries about rent.
I already figured listening to Justin Theroux and Jennifer Aniston would be fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, in a way that would be, you know, fascinating in the sense of like, holy fuck, these people are out of touch. But then to imagine them having... Now, I just want 40... Can anyone who's listening to this podcast, does anyone have 45 minutes of overheard...
I ask our listeners to wiretap a lot of different people. So maybe add Jennifer Aniston and Justin Theroux
Justin
to the wiretap.
Jennifer Aniston dated. Can you imagine their breakup? They probably said that it was to do with some kind of past life.
Well, the Akashic Records wrote about that decades before it happened. Yeah,
they knew it. Was like, they read Jennifer, the ghost encyclopedia. I have to break up with you because I think my ghost child just wasn't up to snuff.
I mean,
she's
what? It's entirely possible if Jennifer Aniston listened to this podcast, she would just be going like, what the fuck? For real? Oh, that's why that one teacher said that weird thing about root races. Like, you do get that feeling.
Maybe,
Yeah. So, one Waldorf school in King's Langley, England, was shut down in 2017 following a series of failed safety inspections. A Department of Education report noted, pupils say that they are safe, but they are not because of flaws in the school's systems and procedures for safeguarding and child protection. So it does seem like, again, and this is something like the former students who are critical of the schools do say, we all really enjoyed our time there. It seemed like a really good place. It was only kind of later that you started to realize there was some weird shit going on. In this case, the closing seems to have been due to the school's failure to abide by basic safety rules and not directly due to their wacky occult beliefs. The Waldorf School in Garden City, Long Island, however, was nearly shut down
as a
result
of
their
hometown.
Wacky occult beliefs. Yeah!
Garden City, Long Island is my hometown. That's where I went to Thanksgiving every year growing up.
Yeah, the student that we read about who was talking about like how some of his teachers would drop weird shit about race science and stuff, that's where he went.
Okay, it's
a
rich town.
Long Island,
it's a rich
Waldorf
town.
School. Oh, yeah. In 1979, the New York Times published this very fun article titled, Psychic Ex-Students' Influence Shakes Waldorf School. Yeah, that's a great fucking headline. The issue started by talking about the Garden City Waldorf School's teacher training program, which trained roughly 20 student teachers per year to take positions in one of the dozens upon dozens of Waldorf schools operating at the time. Quote, What was described by one parent as internal chaos began when Mr. Walton, who has said that he is able to communicate with certain beings in the spiritual world, allegedly used these powers to advise school officials on matters ranging from language curriculum to what music to play at a school dance. As his influence reportedly grew among leading faculty members and with John F. Gardner, a former headmaster and at the time director of the Waldorf Institute, other staff and faculty members became resentful, called a meeting, and voted to seek the resignations of those who accepted his suggestions. So, we see a couple of things here. One is that the student basically claims to have the same thing happen to him that happened to Steiner, where suddenly he can talk to spirits. And, like, a bunch of high-level teachers go along with him and change the school's policies based on this guy's, what this guy says, ghost told him.
Right. So but, it was like, he was like the Rasputin of the Waldorf school.
Yeah, but in what you got to point out a couple of times just for the sake of fairness, other members of the faculty were like, this is bullshit. Made him resign and stuff. So like it is a scandal, and it is emblematic of some problems within the Waldorf schools. It also suggests that a number of the staff and faculty are not howling lunatics who believe in ghost libraries. So I do want to be fair. This is a long time past Steiner's death, and there's evidence that like a lot of them don't believe the craziest parts of this belief system. Now, in spite of the scandal, the Garden City Waldorf School continued to operate and is still teaching students to this day. It is one of 1,000 operating Waldorf schools on the planet. There are 150 in North America.
Wow, that's a lot.
In some parts of the world. Yeah.
That's three estates.
Yeah, that is three estate.
God
now, in
damn.
Some parts of the world, like the United Kingdom, several of these institutes even receive public funding. At any given point in time, several hundred thousand children are enrolled in taking classes using lesson plans based in Anthroposophy, a fundamentally racist philosophy. And it gets worse, because racism is not the only horrifying thing at the core of Anthroposophy. See, Rudolf Steiner was a very influential academic in Germany during World War I. He'd been a friend of Helmut von Moltke, the chief of the German General Staff until his death in 1916.
There are no people in the world who fucking were more dangerous than German academics during World War One period.
Oh yeah.
If we could go back in time and take all the fucking academies of Germany during World War One and just dump them into a volcano, we'd be better off.
Yeah, maybe like all of the people with any position of power whatsoever in Germany in World War One and dump them into a volcano.
Yeah, it's just funny. That was a danger. Yeah. God, the people who are like philosophizing in Germany during World War One were
terrible.
Fucking dangerous motherfuckers.
Yeah. Now, after von Moltke's death in 1916, Steiner continued to channel his ghost and ask it for advice. As batty as this sounds, he was held in not insignificant influence among the German leadership.
Of course not.
Of course not. Why would he?
Yeah, no.
He's talking to our old general through a ghost phone.
They were ready for it. That's fine.
As these stuffy old aristocrats in their ridiculous hats watched the Bolshevik Revolution sweep through Russia and listened to Woodrow Wilson sketch out his ideas on self-determination, Rudolf Steiner was hard at work providing them with an alternate theory for how the world could be reorganized after the war. He called this the tripartite structuring of the social organism. Modern anthroposophists call it social threefolding, or the threefold commonwealth. Here's how Staudenmeier describes what that is. Quote, "The three branches of this scheme, which resembles both fascist and semi-feudal corporatist models, are the state, political, military, and police functions, the economy, and the cultural sphere. This last sphere encompasses all judicial, educational, intellectual, and spiritual matters, which are to be administered by corporations, with individuals free to choose their school, church, court, etc. Anthroposophists consider this threefold structure to be naturally ordained. Its central axiom is that the modern integration of politics, economy, and culture into an ostensibly democratic framework must falter because, according to Steiner, neither the economy nor cultural life can or should be structured democratically. The cultural sphere, which Steiner defined very broadly, is a realm of individual achievement where the most talented and capable should predominate, and the economy must never be subject to democratic public control because then it would collapse. Steiner's economic and political naivete are encapsulated in his claim that capitalism will become a legitimate capitalism if it is spiritualized."
This is Steiner still? This is the same guy?
This is the same fucking guy. He had so many ideas, and they're all terrible.
I mean, they're very much like, I mean, I guess maybe we'll get to this later, but the fact is that what's going on in the American government right now is
is that.
There's yeah. that. That shit is going on. Like that, this whole
I mean, charter school
belief of like get rid of public education and like this, you know, I'm not saying charter schools are necessarily associated with racism or, but the idea of what's her face? Who's the head of the education department?
Betsy DeVos.
Yes. Like I would not be surprised if eugenics played some, you know, whether she realizes it or not, her and her brother, Eric Prince, they have these ideas of like Judeo-Christian values that are under attack. And I mean, there's a lot of that kind of mysticism under it's underlying modern conservatism as well in America. They don't call it mysticism. They call it make America, you know, great again. But this make America great again. But this great again has a sort of mystical quality to it because it's they can't really define what that means, and it has a lot to do, of course, or is entirely to do with race. But you know, make America great again is a mystical slogan because it's not grounded in reality. It's just it's something that's open to interpretation.
Yeah,
I mean the whole shining city on a hill idea of America is a mystical bullshit.
People love that shit.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I would not be surprised if Betsy DeVos has read this man as a Rudolf Steiner.
You know, to be honest, I'm going to guess the person in American politics right now who he had a lot more influence on than Betsy DeVos is Marianne Williamson. And we are going to talk about that.
Okay.
And Rudolf Steiner's history with the Nazis and how we invented organic farming in part two of this.
This guy was relentless.
This dude has, there's still so much gas left in the tank,
Jesus
man. It's fucking wild. Yeah. But you know what it's time for now?
What?
Time for you to plug your pluggables.
Oh, is it right?
This is the end of the first episode on Steiner.
Okay. God, I've had this fucking sinus infection for... it's not even a sinus infection. It's just like endless sinus shit for a month anyway. You can hear me complain about my sinuses on Twitter, at The Crofton Show, or on my Instagram, Chris_Crofton. And I do my famous Cold Brew Got Me Like series on there, which is just very important. And I write an advice column called The Advice King for the Nashville Scene, and you should Google The Advice King and read all of them. There's like 200, and they're all fucking good. And you should go listen to my record, Hello, It's Me, which came out last year and got a 7.4 on Pitchfork.
And you can find me not on Pitchfork, but often brandishing a pitchfork at passersby on the highway. I love pitchforking. It's an art as much as it is a science. You can find this podcast on the internet at behindthebastards.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at @bastardspod. You can find me on Twitter at @iwriteokay. You can find Waldorf schools in the real world by finding a rich kid who wants to dance well. Shouting that out of them. That's the end of the episode until Thursday and part two. I just want everyone to remember that at one point in his life, Joe Biden almost got into a knife fight with a guy nicknamed Corn Pop.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.